Okay, it's 5 o'clock, so why don't we call the meeting to order? I believe we should start off with a roll call.
Commissioner Ford?
Here.
Commissioner Hollingsworth?
Here.
Commissioner McMillan?
Here.
Commissioner Bilkey?
Here.
Commissioner Olson is excused. Vice Chair Hitt will be a little bit late, and Commissioner Merrick?
Here. Okay. Do we have any audience participation cards? Any present here, someone go ahead and turn this to you.
It's your turn.
Thank you.
First thing, item number one on our agenda will be to review and approve the May, wasn't that long ago? May regular session meeting minutes. Everybody's got a draft. You want to take a minute to review it? Does anybody want to move to approve the May 9th meeting minutes?
I'll move to approve the minutes. Second.
I don't think we need to do, a roll back on it. Okay, into the good part of the discussion. Item number two, updated discussion on the water conservation program with Carmen Olson.
About 50 to 60% of water on their yards or outdoors. And so, where do our customers fall? We kind of want to know more information about that. I think there's no question that although indoor water use is important from a conservation perspective, with the introduction of efficient appliances, plumbing fixtures, the gain in water savings begins to kind of level out. And so looking at outdoors with clear information is a better potential water savings. So I'll talk more about the project and some key findings and what our next steps may look like. So we have over 20,000 meter connections, and in a year's time, over 800 million points of data go through our AMI system. The challenge for us and many utilities is to use this data effectively to make decisions on. But in starting this project, I soon realized that the ability for us to process and manage that much data really is quite time intensive and might require further software or technology to help us do that. Or really, this is just the first step in a larger process that we're working in, to wrap our arms around this data and to get the information out of it that it can provide. So our scope and goals, our focus for this project is single-family residential. It includes both rural valley and countryside service areas. We'd like to look at all meter classifications at some point, commercial, multifamily in the future. But for now, single-family residential is our highest consumer of our potable water, and so this is kind of where we started the process. We looked at 2019 and 2020 water consumption, AMI, our hourly read data. Keep in mind this was COVID. It'll be interesting to get a comparison what we look like, after this. We might look quite different after this. We weren't able to get information ahead of those years. The accessibility becomes more difficult to get the older information, historical information. So we're looking at these 2 years of data. And we wanted to have have a tool that could enhance or build on our current programs like WaterSmart. We want to be able to leverage those and use those in a better way. We want to be able to identify groups or individuals with a high, you know, water savings potential. And we also want to apply those outreach efforts and then be able to measure that over time. So just the basic phases here. Tetra Tech Inc. was awarded the contract. We kicked off in February in 2021 and we wrapped it up in June of this year. We coordinated with IT, our GIS, and of course our census AMI provider. The project stayed within budget, you know, but additional time was required. Scrubbing that type of data, that amount of data, that takes quite a bit of time and effort on the contractor's part, and making sure that we protect people's private information. All that stuff had to come into play a little bit longer. Deliverables were modeled, a dashboard for us, this is internal facing, and a final report and user guide, just for our use. So basically, BI is an umbrella term for the technology that enables data preparation, mining, management, and visualization. There are a number of BI tools available. We happen to have Microsoft Power BI. And it allows end users like us to identify actionable information and facilitate data-driven decision-making. You know, these tools focus on self-service capabilities, which is really kind of nice because it reduces our dependency on IT for writing code. We can update this model. We can take, you know, a year or 2 years of data and dump it in there and get a whole new model to look at. So it's a nice framework. So we were able to maintain a large number of meters for the analysis. Data loss was mainly due to large time gaps. You know, we have people that don't live here full time. And so, you know, they can be gone for large periods of time. That data is basically lost. Anomalies, another, you know, erroneous type negative read, things that have to be cleaned off. We started with over 18,000 residential meters, and now we came down to a sample of 12,697. It's a pretty good sample, losing about 30%. Characteristics we looked at were continuous water use, weeks basically, you know, lot and home size, timed events, specifically irrigation. There are, you know, other behaviors and demographics, but budget and time constraints kind of play a role in what you choose to take a look at. We're not able to break down water use to levels of toilets, showers, those sorts of things. Residential water use is highly variable. That's no surprise there. Profiles allow us to determine consumption trends and use those benchmarks for comparison. I'll move on to the key findings. So meters were grouped by communities, or HOAs, for comparison. For example, Rancho Vistoso, you know, they have a lot of different little communities in there. So to identify all those little bits and pieces in there it can be difficult. But we had 115 communities represented, so that's a pretty good number there. Although we have 115 communities, all the homes within the community may not be represented. We may only have a partial percentage of the homes in that particular area. And when homes are built are important for comparison as well. We had an estimated about 30% of Oro Valley communities were developed prior to 1992. And about 26% of the homes were built prior to 1992. That's an important date because the government mandated in 1992 for low water use devices. So homes built after that time are considered more efficient, or are they? So that allows us to kind of compare some things. Our highest water using homes in Oro Valley are those built in 1970s, approximately 223 homes. It's a small percentage of our total population there, but. Right? So home size matters. So on the graph, we have, you know, kind of our, most of our home size distribution is between 1,500 and 3,000 square feet. And that count on the left is homes or meters. The size of resident influences water use. For every 100 square feet in building space, homes use an average of 9.4 gallons of water per day. So, for example, a 3,000 square foot home uses about 141 gallons more a day than a 1,500 square foot home. Lot size does not significantly influence. I have a lot of customers that say, well, I have a big lot, therefore I use a lot of water, but that's not necessarily, you know, the case there. So 26% of homes have pools. And those 26% homes with pools used over a third of the total residential consumption. So we have kind of a smaller percentage of people with pools, and yet they have a larger percentage of consumption. So that's pretty significant there. On average, the presence of pools increased water use by 82% compared to those without a pool. What's going on there? I mean, we've got a lot to, you know, look forward to and look into. You know, what dry, is it just the pool? Are there other things coming into play there? Do people with pools have, I don't know, more vegetation in the yard, more percent cover of plants? It's hard to say. And homes with pools and irrigation have the highest water use, so that's no surprise there. But our, you know, outdoor water use has significant educational value. We really need to start talking about pools. We need to start talking about irrigation and find better ways to get that information out there. So detecting irrigation patterns, this is one part of people's consumption that we can actually kind of break down. It is a timed event, and if you have a threshold, Tetra Tech and WaterSmart use similar methodology, you can determine a signature or a water use pattern that lets you say, hey, that's an irrigation event. So up on the top on the left, you know, this person, these are days across the bottom, and this person obviously irrigates every day. And they use about 300 gallons on their irrigation use. That's what WaterSmart estimates that they use on their yard. On the bottom, that's the day. So you have your irrigation, and you have your little blips of water use throughout the day. But clearly, for this person, irrigation is an important part of their water use. And on the right, you have a skip day. And they're using about 200 gallons, so they use a little bit less, but they're using water every other day. But they also put quite a bit of water out there. So 15-minute reads are more conducive to determine irrigation. We have hourly reads, and that kind of limits us somewhat. So there's a lot of assumptions built in with irrigation. So up to 33% of total water consumption is linked to irrigation. 47% of meters appear to have a scheduled irrigation. Now, if you are someone that maybe hose waters occasionally, that's very hard to pick up and identify as irrigation. Or maybe you use under a specific threshold of water that Tetra Tech used to have a threshold. So it's kind of hard to say. Those with irrigation use an average of 353 gallons per day, as compared to 158 for those without. And we have about 40.5% that irrigate on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We have a very similar percentage for people that run Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And we have a small percentage of people that run 7 days a week. I'm happy for that. I thought we would have a lot higher percentage of people running 7 days a week, but that's our typical schedule. Water use in general just follows a seasonal pattern, you know, more in the summer, less in the winter. So water use increases as temperature rises. 5-degree difference in temperature equals an increase in use of about 187,000 gallons across the 12,697 meters. So February, you can see those kind of dips. You know, that's a very rainy time frame for us. 2019 and 20 were a time period that we had some significant rain events. So I can imagine that water dipped down. October, you have kind of a peak again. We can be hot in October. People can just, they think September's coming, fall's coming, and then they got to crank that irrigation back up. So that could be a spike, as well as people received grass during that time as well. So it's kind of hard to say what that little spike is. But seasonal adjustments are key to water savings in irrigation. They're imperative. That curve could look much different if people really reined in watering, you know, when they could. Improvements can be made on water. Oh, I'm sorry.
Carl, do you think would their slopes be steeper on the sides if people set their adjusted irrigation to temperature?
I think it's possible. It would be more of a real good bell-like curve instead of this kind of, you know.
It almost looks like they forget on the back half, but remember on the first half.
Yes, and that's true. I mean, that those cooler temperatures, they just go, oh, this is great. But then when they get on the other side, it lingers. That heat lingers for so long, they kind of have some concern of turning that timer down. So definitely improvements could be made on watering guidelines. They're kind of tough to figure out. Yes?
There doesn't appear to be any bump there for the monsoon season.
No, and I'll tell you that...
Just people not paying attention enough.
That's correct. I mean, we did some work with GPCB, and what you find is temperature definitely drives irrigation, but rain does not. Precipitation, we can have huge rain events and we still have people that don't turn that timer off.
That I find that really interesting, because we didn't have near the data that you have, but way back in the 80s at Tucson Water, when we were first kind of trying to figure out, you know, how to shape peaks and all that, we tried to do some luck at, and this was probably pre-timers. I don't think a lot of people had timers, but we could actually see, you know, a correlation between rain or even the threat of rain. People would water less, but I think the timers have taken that judgment out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, really, because it does. It's set it and forget it, kind of an attitude, and I think that definitely happens.
But in this day and age, there are smart controllers that could
change
that whole picture.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but I'll tell you, there's not a lot of people using, like the wireless, the true ones that, you know, are considered smart timers. You know, even though they're very difficult for some people to use. Timers are still this kind of, what is that? I don't know how to run it. I don't know what it is. So it's kind of strange.
Do you think it looks significantly different for commercial irrigation? Do you think those people managing those are more attuned to them?
I would think that's the case. I would think their water management skills are there and they're trying to do that. I'd like to say yes, but I'm not sure. You know, in looking at a lot of data over time, you kind of see similar things happening there.
Carla, you do your water audits, I think, too. We have a lot of folks that don't even know how to, that their landscaper sets the timer.
Very true. Very true. And you know, when a landscaper sets your timer, you know, water is free to them. I mean, they don't really, you know, you pay them to come and, you know, take care of your garden and make it look the best that it can. And so water is free and they apply it freely.
So I think it's even worse than that. So there's two ways you get a smart timer. Number one, you go to a new house and the landscaper comes in and you've got a new landscape, so they turn it on.
Yeah.
they turn on water every day, and the name of stuff is used, and that's established, and then no one goes back and changes that. And then you have the same thing. If somebody comes in and does updates or upgrades or something like that, they're going to have the same name.
Very, very true.
And apparently nobody pays the extra $50 for a rain switch.
Yeah. A quick slide here with PQs, and no real surprise. I mean, you know, 7 a.m. And 7 p.m. are peak use hours. You know, people are getting up in the morning, they're getting ready for work, taking showers, come home at night, and they're doing maybe the same thing, getting clothes done, and laundry, and that sort of thing. So those are our peak times.
Morning might also be a good time for irrigation.
Yes, and that's probably more common in the morning time than in the evening time. So, yeah, that's a good point. Yes. So some next steps. You know, currently we're in the process of further review of the data that we're looking at. I have a lot more digging to do on continuous water use as a very interesting portion of all this data. And to take a look at, you know, a little further look at it. Is going to be helpful for us to see. We have people that ran continually for 17,000 hours the entire time of the 2019 and 2020. They ran continually. So there are people that have some leaks out there. So it'll be interesting to do some more work on that. We want to be able to develop best management practices and benchmarks to improve conservation messaging, and of course, our utility metrics. So we want to be able to identify communities and or individuals that have the highest water saving potential. We like to plan and implement a pilot program and marketing campaign. We would hopefully, you know, bring in WaterSmart, use our group message feature to talk to people, and track consumption over time to measure effectiveness, and hopefully collaborate with HOAs during this. Maybe we go to their board meetings, maybe we write in their newsletters, things like that. So this is just a Kenyatta Hills HOA. It's an HOA that I chose because they have a high percentage of pools. They also have a high percentage of continuous water use and gallons per square foot and things like that. So, you know, if I could start something like that, a pilot program, I might choose Kenyatta Hills and, you know, use WaterSmart to track them over time and also to communicate with the customers. If you wanted to go a little further, if you were able to, we might be able to look at funding, grant funding through, you know, organizations like Bureau of Reclamation. It may require planning, of course. You want to make sure you're using those funds in the most efficient way and effective way. You know, staff or intern requirements may be there if we do something like that. Would we consider rebates, you know, while we have that funding? They are a high administrative effort. And I don't know if that's something we would take on, but could we do a self-certified water efficient home where we put a video out where customers do their own water audit? It's possible. We want to collaborate with others as well. U of A, Tucson Audubon, all those people would be very willing to provide that information gap, you know, the stuff that we can't provide. They might be able to supply that to us, and then we can also help them in the process. So, any questions? Yes.
Not so much a question. I'd just like to comment. I'm very impressed. I think it's a process that's finally going to gather data that will could really inform future policy decisions, especially as we move into more serious water shortages. And you're raising the question of rebates. Yeah, we've never known before where the high return rebates would be with any assurance from data, but this might be first step in getting to that point.
Yeah, you know, utilizing AMI data is not, it's just not any efficient or effectively done so far. I mean, it's very hard to get that. So to have a utility like ours be able to kind of look at that data, it's really interesting project.
The question is, one of the outcomes of this intended to be, like you're talking about, like perhaps rebates, but something along the lines of, hey, we know those people with not smart irrigation controllers could probably save a lot of water if they had them. Maybe we could design a program. Hey, we know those people who have smart irrigation controllers have no idea how to use them, and we should train them how to do that. And hey, nobody has rain switches, and they're only $50. Maybe you should think about that. I mean, is that a
yes? I mean, yeah, definitely. That is a path there. That
the other puzzling thing is, I just can't understand constant. I get leaks, but constant use is pretty baffling. I mean, how would you not notice?
It's, you know, it's funny. Customers say that as well, but I'll tell you, we've had customers that have had service line leaks. 160,000 gallons later, they never saw it. They were in an area of topography where, you know, that water just went poof, it was gone. And so it's interesting. And if your irrigation control valve is just stuck on a little bit, you're not gonna find that laying on top of the, you know, the surface easily. You're gonna find that in the lowest point of your yard, and that's where that water's gonna hang on that irrigation, you know, drip emitter. And so those are things that people just aren't really picking up on.
I didn't have a question, I just want to make a comment. I just wanted to congratulate you, the department, for taking on this project, because it is data that couldn't be more timely given the state of water issues in Arizona and other lower basin states. And it's going to be potentially data that the department finds very useful going forward in making policy decisions, like you said. The data for what we looked at and what was verified shows water use on a typical single family residential home of over 65% going to landscaping and pools. When you think about that number for a minute, you're like, wow. So that's a lot of water, drinking water basically, potable water, going for something that's not potable, unless you consider a pool potable. But I'm hoping we don't get there as far as water shortages and all that, but if we do, I think this data will come into play and really help the department make some key decisions.
Do you have any sense about the owners have turf at this point?
We do not. I don't believe that it's a real high percentage here in Oro Valley, but
it used to be more.
You mean years ago or?
No, I mean I think people are taking it out.
I think they are.
I took a look at the satellite image of my own neighborhood, mm-hmm. and very few of the houses seem to have turf.
Yes, I
several
would say
I know have had it ripped out or replaced with something.
Yeah. That's very true. I think that is getting less over time. People don't want to pay the maintenance. They don't want to put the water on it anymore.
They don't want to get up in the morning and have to mow the damn
stuff. Yeah, exactly.
105 degrees.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo my colleagues' comments about how great this is and congratulate you and everybody involved in doing this. And as far as I know, Oro Valley is about the only utility, definitely in this region, but maybe even statewide, that has managed to kind of utilize this big data in a real meaningful way. And so I think that's great, but it's also, you're going to be a target. Everybody's going to want to come, you know, figure out what, you know, you did, and because a lot of people are moving that direction, but I think they're still struggling with, you know, how to get the most out of these systems. They're expensive, and you know, but I think you guys have a model here that is others are going to want to emulate. So I congratulate you on that. I think you're a leader in the industry.
Commissioner Forrest and the other commissioners, that's the car and I were working on this project. My overreaching goal, they said, let's take a lead on this. Mm-hmm. We have the infrastructure in place. We've invested in the capital infrastructure. The data is unmanageable in a manual sense. It's, you know, 80 million or 800 million data points, whatever it was. And we said, let's, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like when we get there, because we're kind of in uncharted territory.
Right.
But we decided we're going to take the lead on this, and we want other people to be involved in this project. No one's as smart as all of us. And also, we want to get the fingerprint for Oro Valley, because Oro Valley doesn't use water exactly the same way as the city of Tucson or other water service providers. We want to know, how do we use water? How do we message? How do we take our conservation message to the next step? And is it being effective? And by being metric-driven, that's the direction we're going to, is being metric-driven instead of, well, we think it's working, and you know, we're really trying to let the data tell us to steer us. So appreciate the comments and Karn's work on this. You know, she's the project manager on this project, and it's been a lot of work. So love the comments, and that's exactly where we wanted to go. Thank you.
Hey, Peter, the only thing I would say is that I think there's an opportunity for voluntary collaboration before you get to the point where you change regulations. So you can kind of compel people with rebates and giveaways, and you can appeal to the adopters before you put the hammer down and smack the others in the head.
Well, yeah, and like I said, we're in this total discovery mode right now.
I think there's a couple water utilities in Southern California, and I'll get the names for you, but they have similar programs. And California's got statewide regulations, that those are pretty clear, but there's a couple collaboratives that do things with voluntary participatory compliance. So I don't know, I mean, maybe it'll help, but just check it out. Well, thanks, Karn. I think you were the head of the day. Okay, moving on to number three, update and discussion on water utility financials.
Mary, it's okay, now we can go down.
Yeah,
now
we can go.
Yeah, it's...
Where are you going?
This is quite a content-packed meeting. It's
getting better. Well, in a given context, one of the things the commission's going to see more of is just operationally how we're operating.
Okay, so just a financial update of how we ended last fiscal year, 21-22. So potable water sales, we exceeded budget by $497,000, and it was primarily due to water sales from residential of $119,000, irrigation sales of $138,000, and construction of $193,000. Reclaimed water sales, came in under budget by $31,000, and that's just due to consumption being less than what was budgeted. Groundwater preservation fees came in, exceeded budget by $52,000 based on higher consumption. Service fees came in under budget by $21,000, and that was due to meter sales coming at $148,000 compared to the $300,000 that we budgeted. So overall, our revenues exceeded budget by $497,000. So personnel, we were under budget by $257,824,000, and that was due to vacancy savings, operations and maintenance. We were under budget by $326,936 due to cost savings. We exceeded, in capital, we exceeded budget by $117,000, and that was just due to higher than anticipated project costs, and Leo goes through that in his presentation. Of the projects we completed last year. Debt service, we came in at budget, and then so total expenses came in under budget by 97. New meters installed this fiscal year was, the last fiscal year was 148. Our customer base was 21,114. Water audits, 37. And Water Smart registered accounts was 7,095. That's the end of my presentation.
Mary, we installed 505 meters last fiscal year?
That's when we had that really big year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll make some position.
Do you know why the water sales exceeded budget?
Why?
Yeah, is there
hotter, drier?
Yeah.
Well, and conservation or a conservative outlook on our consumption. A combination of both. We're conservative in our.
And usually construction sales are low when we budget lower than what's coming.
Yeah, that's going to be an awfully hard one to forecast. And the irrigation, that's potable water used for irrigation. So it's a combination. I think the bulk of it was a hotter, drier year causing more irrigation usage and pool filling and things like that.
Yeah, we seem to have normally a high number of phone calls of people inquiring about discounts because they were going to be draining and filling their pools. We received lots of calls on that very day. But we shouldn't pool, I don't know why.
They want a quantity discount?
I have one question. Is that it? It's been a savings that you kind of carry for a couple of years. Is that sustainable? Like, hey, you're budgeting for this and you're intentionally not filling, so that's a good guy that you can keep?
No, so one of the things we've been doing is certain positions, when they become vacant, we're not just knee-jerk reacting to filling them. Like, for example,
okay.
A lot of those vacancies have been water operations, and David has been taking the opportunity to reassess his needs. How does the organization run? Because David has a good sense of what he needs and doesn't need, and he'll say, do I need this many people in this area? And he'll let a place run for 6 months to see. He's making sure he has the right people in the right place and doing the right things, and it's part of just seeing how does it run without that position. And sometimes we find, hey, we really do need that, and it might be vacant for 6 months, or we're like, you know, we have to use that person over here.
I got it. So it's not something, it's not a position or a number of positions that just have been running along for, it's just simply an attrition term.
But here again, it was assessing.
Yeah.
And
it hasn't
been just one position, it's been a...
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
How does that number compare with prior years?
It's been about the same. I think we've always one or two positions open. I think right now we're in the process of recruitment and we'll be acceptable. I think we're only holding one position open right now, aren't we?
Right, just got one position.
Yeah.
We're trying to see where we want it.
Usually it's one or two that are open at any given time.
Yes, I mean, that easily explains that you probably have a fairly standard, pretty steady attrition rate, so the attrition rate is probably directly linear to...
Well, that last fiscal year, we had a wave of retirements, legacy employees that had been here for 26 years, and then we took that opportunity to reassess. Left it open for a while just to make sure we needed it or didn't need it or where it needed to be.
All right, standing at the ready... is Lee Jacobs to update and discuss capital improvement projects.
Okay, good evening, Commissioner. So today I'm going to give you an update on this our past year CIP projects to let you know where we're at. So typically every year we have a couple well projects. This past year we had two well rehabs, our CS2, which completes our well field for the countryside service area. Our well rehab, we rehab CS2 last year. The prior year we rehab CS1, and it included the same thing. We go in, we pull the existing pump motor, we send it off to get evaluated to one of our contractors. They evaluate it and then they do any necessary maintenance up. In this case, none of our motors need to be rewound or anything like that. They were just more cleaning and minor work to the motors themselves. The pumps are reevaluated in our engineering department, and if we decide, you know, it's determined based on, you know, how our pump tests go and things like that, we size it appropriately. And so here you can kind of see on this slide here where they're pulling. I just included a picture of the pump being pulled on the lower left, and then our well scan comes in at pre and post. So we do a pre well video log of the casing just to kind of get an idea of what the casing itself looks like, if it's getting plugged or anything like that. And then we'll send it down. Typically we'll brush and bail it. So they take it with a bristle brush and we'll brush the different zones of the casing. And then we'll go back in and just evaluate, make sure that they've gotten everything and it's taken care of. It's opened up some of the slots in the casing. And then we'll go back and re-equip it. So that's what we did with CS2 and well D9, which is just south of the Kendall Earl High School. It's in our main service area. And it typically runs the same way, the same process for both, unless there's something unusual that happens. And then additionally, what we've done in this year and years past is we're updating our well heads there so that we can accommodate for our Saudi tubes and our other equipment that we can put in the well to monitor it through telemetry. This is just another photo of well D9. So here, Nakoma Sky, this is our capital project we're developing. Nakoma County, you probably would recognize these photos here. These are recycled photos from years past, but we're still working through the process with the developer. TEP is, right now we're just at the point where we're waiting for TEP to bring in the power to the site. Because it is a private development, the developer chose to bring it in themselves. We offered to bring in the power, but they decided they wanted to do that. So we're still kind of in a holding pattern when it comes to the electrical being brought in. But the design itself is complete, except for the electrical, because when they bring the transformer in, we'll connect it. So steam pump well, we have that one as well. This is another one. This year, we're moving a lot quicker on this one now. We're hoping to have a design complete here probably in the next month or two. We hired, talking about vacancies, we just filled a vacancy with a senior civil engineer, and he's going to be tackling this project as well. And so here we are. He's essentially, we've had, this is just an example of a cover sheet here for this steam pump well. We're moving along. We should have a design complete here in the next couple months, I would say, and then we'll look at getting it to equipping and working. This particular site, because we are working at steam pump, there is some historical, I think it's the town historical commission that we need to work with in the parks department to build a facility that kind of fits in.
A new facility that looks old.
A new facility that looks old. Some Adobe or something like that. So that's in the works as well. So last year we did complete the loop. We did this internal design for a steam pump well to accommodate a lot of the development that Parks is doing now with the rehabilitation or the rehabbing of the building on the park site itself to bring fire protection to those sites and fire hydrants as well as additional meter locations.
And actually on this job, it's worth noting that Lee did the design. He was a design engineer on this, and then some of Lee's staff and David Allred's water operations staff self-performed all of that distribution main expansion at a considerable savings to the town. The utility didn't need, it's a benefit to the utility to have this loop system, but not required. It was more required to meet the requirements of fire protection for steam pump ranch, but thanks to Lee and David for their teams to save the town a lot of money and made a better system for the utility.
Thank you. So that's fully operational. And of course, every year we have HP tanks that we do. We're rehabbing them. We're certifying them, making them American Society of Mechanical Engineers certified, board certified pressure vessels. whereas previous years we had vessels that were older, not necessarily certified. And some of those were having to be patched, in some key areas. So we just wanted to make sure as we go through our system, we're maintaining and we're updating any of our vessels that need to be updated. And so last year it was Crimson Canyon. It's a small booster site. These are two small HP tanks. Normally we do one, but because of the price, it went a little bit over budget on this one just because we did two, and it just made more sense. Economies of scale there, so we had our contractor do the design, come in, bring both the tanks in and reset them at the same time, and it worked out okay. And so you can see here where we have the lower right there at the shop at the contractor site where he fabricates the vessels. He's coated, and then one of our inspectors on the upper left is inspecting. And then over here on the right is where they're doing a spark test, where they're just checking for the mill thickness and making sure there's no gaps in the mill thickness and making sure that we've got the coverage. And typically, we exceed our spec when it comes to our mill thickness. And we have another inspector up there. And then here on the two middle photos, you can see where they've got the crane and they're loading, they're lifting it and they're putting it in place. And you can see the effort of the folks that it takes to get something like this into place, because we were only down, I think, for maybe 5-6 hours at this site. But, we had electrical, we had some SCADA controls that we had to do, all kind of simultaneously, all these people working together. And it worked out well, so we got everyone into including our staff, probably about 5-6 folks from our team to.
There was a lot of people in that job.
There was a lot of people.
Small confined area.
A small confined area.
Really went well.
Yeah, and what we'd like to do too is that we're having these boosters, the HP tanks, we're also going to start looking at the booster sites themselves as well, looking at their pumps and motors and any header pipe that needs to be replaced. This particular time we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything with SCADA here, but we'll probably come back. And, it's a priority thing, right? You prioritize your sites, which sites need to be updated, and so this one was updated. And then we had Rancho Vistoso, is our another year G zone. This is the second, this is the discharge side, the inlet side we did a couple years back. This year we did this, it's another 5,000 gallon HP tank. We did that this year, and so there's some delays, with the fabrication, the cost increases for steel. And we were able to get this one done, and so that one's in place. And we're actually looking at this year doing the actual booster site itself. So we're going to be evaluating either Rancho Vistoso or Sun City, and that's what's coming up this year. So on our independent pipeline design, this is our NORS project. So we've given the notice to proceed for the design build. They've started with the booster site. In Forbay with the initial design, and then our blending line where we'll be blending our D-zone water on Shannon Road, bringing it up from Shannon 80 up to about maybe 3,000 feet from the south between Lambert and Naranja. There's a subdivision there that we're going to be tying into and using that D-zone water to blend with our NORS water. And that contract has been initiated, and the notice of proceed has been given on that as well. There's really not much to show on there as far as photos, but you can see we've started with a cover sheet there, and then we have our notice to proceed and our contract. And this is just a photo of a steam pump. David's crew was out there doing all the work. And that's it. Any questions?
Thank
you.
No questions, then. Item number five is update discussion on water operations.
Wrong way. Oh. Got a tough act to follow with these three. They're really good. Good evening. Tonight I'd like to give you an update on water operations activities for fiscal year 21-22. In water operations, we are staffed at 24 positions that are all ADQ certified operators. We're responsible for the operations and maintenance of both the Oro Valley and the countryside Hobo Water Service areas.
So our day-to-day activities are taking care of the 46 active sites we have, which are wells, reservoirs, booster stations, and four cap weaning stations. We have 375 miles of water mains, about 2,400 fire hydrants, 8,600 valves, 36 PRV stations, and over 21,000 meter service connections with AMI technology, and about 150 water sampling stations. We also take care of the reclaimed water system at seven active sites of reservoir, boosters, lake feeds, and park irrigation, and about 15 miles of reclaimed water main. Some of our additional core functions that we do in addition to that is we operate and monitor the SCADA system for the portable and reclaimed systems. We manage AZ-811, otherwise known as Blue Stake Locates, which we did about 12,500 last fiscal year. We complete customer service work order requests, new meter installs, rereads, customer service, customer inquiries, and other requests from the customer service center. We maintain drinking water compliance, sampling, and reporting in accordance with the Safe Drinking Water Act. And we work closely with engineering, admin, and other town departments, public works, parks, whoever else needs our help. Some of the activities we did in water production, we upgraded flow meters at 12 potable and reclaimed sites. The upgrades were needed to replace aging meters that didn't have AMI capabilities. The meters had to be retrofitted and recalibrated due to our SCADA system. You can see where they had to go in and cut pipes and totally do retrofits in there. Another big project that we did at the water production facility, which is also our reclaim facility, the old access gate was a manual swing open big heavy gates. We upgraded that from a manual to a badge access and automatic operation. That way we know who's coming and going in there. That site does house our SCADA system and some IT components. In partnership with our IT department, we also upgraded the facility security cameras for a higher definition. And then our water control systems group, we were in bad need of backup emergency power for our SCADA system and the IT critical infrastructure. So we did this in two phases, so we'd have to minimize interruption to our SCADA system and operations. The first part we did, you can see on the photo over there, that we added in a battery backup UPS that gives us about an hour and a half of battery power to keep it up. And then on the right side, we added in, the second phase, we added in a backup generator, so we have two, and that give us 8 hours of complete runtime without refueling, in case we have that kind of power outage in there. In our water distribution group, we purchased a valve exercising truck. We purchased it last November 2021. We had to do some upgrades to the truck. We had to add in enhanced Wi-Fi. This parts of the town, there's dead service area in there. And so the IT upgraded that. And our staff worked with IT. We got the valve program into Cartograph so that we can properly manage it. Lee and Peter, they can go in and instantly pull up reports and see what we've done. So far we've done 3.8% of the valves have been exercised. Our goal was 5% at this time. We knew our initial run was going to be slow due to establishing standard operating procedures. So we're getting pretty close to it. Our long-term goal is to actually be able to touch and exercise each valve annually. It's a tall order to do, but it is a doable and a reachable goal that we're ever going to get to.
You'll be the first water operations manager on the planet to accomplish that.
That's my goal.
How many bad valves are you finding when you're...
So we actually did all of Sun City. We did some pump testing up there with Lee's group. And we thought maybe we had a pinch valve in there, so we sent the guys up there, and they did that in about 4 or 5 days. And we actually found at the intersection of
Silverton
and Rancho Vistoso, three valves. And we actually had enough money in the budget that we went in and got those replaced. So We've actually went in and found some valves that were historically labeled as bad valves that weren't bad valves. They just couldn't turn them by hand. So we've stayed there because they were actually on the list to be replaced.
Hmm.
And I think that that's what we'll find more of that than we will find bad valves. Because we're just finding stuff.
Did the machine also, it shouldn't help prevent like shearing the shear keys on nuts and stuff like that with its torque limiting capabilities? And
yeah, so it has a controller on it that you can go in and set and tell it what type of valve it is, whether it's a butterfly valve, gate valve, what size it is. It can then calculate how many turns that it needs to turn.
Yeah.
It also will calculate the amount of torque that it needs. You can manually adjust that so they can really crank it up and they could actually break them if they really wanted to try. But they start low and they'll start low and they'll start going. It'll run it down a little bit and then it'll run it back up and run it down a little bit until it starts getting that torque that it thinks it should have in there.
And to give context, a valve crew, how many valves could you manually exercise realistically in a day before your shoulders are shot?
By hand, about one. My younger guys, they could probably do 10, maybe a day.
And how many can you do with this truck?
So with that truck, when they get going, they should get about 30 to 50 valves, depending on how the valves are lined up. So if you get into an intersection and you got a cluster of three valves, of course, that's going to be easier to get.
Yeah.
Another factor is busy intersections where heavy traffic is. We have to do those come in at night, or we have to set up a traffic control plan. But if we get into a residential area, we can get more.
Yeah.
So it just depends. And that's kind of where we're at now with our program, is figuring out what can we do, you know, normally in a day and get done, and what do we need to cluster and try to get at night, what's going to take special, where we're going to have to get traffic control. We might have to get PD out, help us with some traffic control, come in at night and do them. So this first year and a half of us doing it is going to be kind of slow until we get a procedure figured out.
That's a good program.
It is. That's a big asset to us. In our water meter operations groups, they've been working with the vendor census meters who identified that we had over 335 meters. I think that number's even gone up more. That failed due to batteries dying in them or water occlusion. They had a bad run in about a couple of years where they didn't seal up. Luckily, they're still on under warranty. And since it's honored the warranty, so we got the meters replaced at no cost to the town, to us. We just our labor to go put them in. And I think they're almost caught up with that pretty good. Also, they, working with the vendor, they upgraded our AMI communications equipment at our three main communications towers, one in the countryside. There's one here, and then there's one over at Water Plant 4. So they upgraded the modems, they upgraded some other software in it, gives better communication so it can communicate with Water Smart a little better. The staff also installed 200 plus new services. And again, they responded over 12,500 locate requests. There in the pictures, you can see an old meter where they had to take it out and they put in a new meter, and then a couple guys with boost tape in there. Training. In our water quality group, it's kind of the same thing over and over for those guys. They don't get no spotlights or anything, but it's the same thing. We don't want anything exciting over there. We want it to be boring.
Yeah.
Boring, just same thing. Exciting's not good in that department. So they've done over 44, they did over 44,000 potable water samples taken. That includes filled out analysis where they're taking chlorine or total dissolved solids, pH hardness, a lot of going over to customers' houses and doing a couple of some of those filled analysis for those. It also included a laboratory analysis, both that are compliance mandated and some non-compliance samples. We use the non-compliance samples just more as an indicator so we can kind of see where our water quality is going and what's going on with it. They also manage 1,468 backflow prevention assemblies in the town. 145 of those are owned by the town. They manage that program through Sam's Cross Connection software, and I'm sorry for the misspelling that I didn't catch, which that has greatly helped with them getting their letters sent out to people and making sure that they're getting tested, repaired.
I'm just curious, you know, PFAS is the big thing right now. I'm just curious if you're testing for that, and if so, what, you know, results you've been seeing.
So we haven't done any testing since, the testing that we did was, I think, in UCMR 3.
Actually, we did, I asked Adam, it might have been before you got here.
Probably before I got here.
Did it check all of our wheeling stations?
Yes, they did check the wheeling stations.
Yeah, we were all non-detect.
Yeah, we're all non-detect. So everything, because we're up higher than everybody,
yeah,
and everything's more down that way, which is good that we're up the hill. So we're
kind of,
everybody knocking on wood. Luckily, we don't have anything upstream of us that would contribute to that, you know, with Air Force Base. Right. And
yeah, that. So that's good news.
So
yeah.
We kind of just look down and say, you know, feel bad for them. That's why I don't
mention it. Yeah.
Don't jinx us. And they also permit new construction backflow, so if new commercial building comes in, they'll permit it, they'll go inspect it. And then they also manage the construction water metering for all the construction going around, making sure the hydrants have meters and operable backflow devices on them. Looking forward for fiscal year 22 and 23, we have a few big projects going on. Our biggest project is we're going to upgrade the SCADA system. So SCADA was installed in 1997 with a program called Wonderware. Back in that day, Wonderware was great. It was really top of the line. Mm-hmm. And sometime in the early 2000s, they upgraded it to Rockwell. And they didn't upgrade the whole system. Right now, we're kind of there's pieces of that Wonderware still in, mixed in with that Rockwell. And so our current SCADA system is roughly 20 years old. And, you know, we kept it running, and it serves us fairly well. This fiscal year, we've contracted with a company called Vertec to install a SCADA software called Ignition. It's kind of newer out. It's a really neat software package. It's part of it's cloud-based, so it's easy access. And if you ever want to go on their site, they actually have a version that's free to a homeowner. If you have smart devices in your house, you can run it on your house. It's pretty neat. So our IT department, they're gonna be our lead department on it, because they need to upgrade the servers. They're gonna put new server racks in. It's gonna take, I think they bought 4 or 5 different servers for it, new servers for it. So the benefits of this upgrade is our current SCADA, the way it is set up, we have multiple software bundles, multiple licensing bundles. If one of those software bundles has an update to it, we have to be very careful that if we update that, it doesn't affect the rest of the system. It's a very meticulous balance that we have to do, and we couldn't do it without our IT department. I'm glad that they're on board and our partners. So our current SCADA, again, with multiple software bundles, we don't have what they call a historian, which is a server base that takes all of the history. I mean, lots of, you're talking 800 million data bits, and it's even more than that we're going to be storing. The new addition, it's an all-in-one package, so we don't have to have a different program for our alarms and our call-outs, and it's all in one package. It will make the access for the operators a lot easier. They'll be able to access it from their iPads or their iPhones at any given time. The big thing for me is the user reports are going to be customizable and easily generated. Currently, we have Leah News Group, they'll call and they'll say, hey, I need information on this pump, how many times it came on, pressure readings. And it'll take us 2 or 3 days with this current system to go back through some trending and try to put that together. With this new system, Lee will be able to go in, and he'll have access, his group will have access to go in, and they'll say, okay, this is a report I want to generate, here's what I want to see, and they'll be able to pull it up for themselves. And another thing is our licensing costs are going to be reduced. So we pay an annual maintenance licensing cost on every piece of software that ties into this. This is going to greatly reduce that. We're really looking forward to this project. Another part of that is the instrumentation and the programmable logic controllers out in the field. Our PLCs out in the field, again, they're 20, 30 years old. Some of those are getting out, they're becoming phased out, they're not being supported anymore. Finding parts for them is starting to get tough. So we're looking at over the next 5 to 10 years of getting everything upgraded to what we call the next generation PLC. And as we're going through and we're looking at this, we have the opportunity to evaluate our instrumentation that's in there. Do we need to replace it? Do we need to upgrade it? We're going to take advantage of that. Do we need to add in some instrumentation at some sites, you know, so we can see more stuff? And then we also started just today, actually, the Arizona Department of Corrections Inmate Work Program. We modeled this after Public Works. You guys have probably seen them around doing for the Public Works. We sat down, me, Peter, we sat down and we looked at this and said, now this is a good cost-saving way to get stuff done at our facilities, you know, minor maintenance, painting, landscaping, minor repairs, you know, for a fraction of the cost, and free up our operators to do operator jobs instead of pulling weeds or, as you can see, these guys here removing graffiti. We're going to have staff who are doing it. So we actually, that kicked off today. So we're looking forward to how that program is going to pan out. And with that, I thank you for listening to me. And let me give you an update. And if there's any discussion or questions.
Anything?
Okay. Thank you, David.
Okay, Peter, you're next. Okay, discussion on water resources and water resource usage.
Thank you very much, Chair Merrick. First of all, I just want to express my appreciation to this group here. Over 50% of our department is new staff for the past 5 years. And typically when you lose that kind of legacy, institutional knowledge, you might go into panic mode, but the staff we've been bringing on, I think you can see it from, well, Karn's been here a while, but with Lee, David, Mary, the enthusiasm they have, the passion they have for what they do, the staff they've brought into the organization is just as passionate that we literally see, I see no difference in our, the level of service we provide. In fact, it's better than ever. So thank you, Karn. Fantastic job. Thank you, Lee, David, Mary. Thanks for taking a chance on me and the utility. You've done a great job. Thank you. So with that, this is an update discussion on water resources and water resource usage. Just as, real quick here, you know, with respect to the Colorado River, you know, the Colorado River is a part of our water resource portfolio. You know, the utility has a 10,305-acre-foot allocation of Colorado River water. We direct deliver a portion of that, and we replace the groundwater we pump with a portion of that, and what's left over we store for future use. Colorado River, it's the watershed, and that resource is split up between the upper and lower basin states that's designated this picture here. The current conditions, as this commission knows, we've been experiencing hotter and drier climate for the past 24 years. I'm sure you've all read, and we've discussed in this group here, you know, for calendar year 2021, the water inflow to Lake Powell was, you know, less than 50% of the average inflow, and the projected water inflow to Lake Powell is projected to be less than 60% of the average inflow. We're expecting, or at least I'm planning for, a declaration of a CAP Tier 2 water shortage beginning in January 2023. As we know, a Tier 2 water shortage does not affect the water entitlement of high priority CAP users like Laurel Valley. And currently, the basin states, lower basin states, adhere to the lower basin states drought contingency plan. And then comes the bombshell. In June 14th of 2022, the Senate during the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, the Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner stated that there was a need for quick response and action from across the basin as required to reduce the water use of the Colorado River system. The Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner stated that the necessary cuts would need to be between 2 and 4 million acre feet a year. And this is on a 15 million acre foot system. So stating that those are very significant cuts in excess of what the lower drought contingency plan currently details. So right now, all Colorado River users were working to develop a plan for further reductions by mid-August of this year. That doesn't mean the reductions necessarily take place by mid-August of this year, but we need to have a plan together for additional reductions. It's a little vague as to, there's a big difference between 2 million acre feet a year and 4 million acre feet a year. Does that mean we're supposed to hit 3 or is somewhere in there okay? But this signals, the commissioner's statement signals a major policy change in how the Colorado River water could be allocated. And this is to all Colorado River water users. This is upper basin states and lower basin states. It's not just CAP. It's not just Arizona. I listened to some follow-up Senate hearings online, and Senator Kelly had asked, well, does Arizona have to make up all the difference? And the response was, no, this is all basin states need to come up with another plan. Heard a lot of different ideas on the plan. Nothing is concrete yet. But we're supposed to know something by mid-August. So we'll see what that looks like. I've heard lots of different things. I've heard things like, just have agriculture take all of it, or, the highest priority users maybe just reduce their allocation enough so that they still are able to meet all their direct delivery requirements. But maybe they give up whatever water they would be storing for future years. So a lot of different things going on. But we'll let you know. We'll
so is her mandate a requirement or a suggestion?
It's a statement. What is it? It's fuzzy at best. I don't even know what. And Alan, you might have a sense of this. I don't even know what legal grounds the Bureau of Reclamation would have. But can they just step all over the lower basin drought contingency plan?
Yeah.
Alan, do you have any sense of that?
A little bit. I mean, I'll give you my take on it. I think it's an ultimatum. Basically, the Bureau is saying they're the water master, so they can change things if they want, and if they see a need to protect the system, they can do what they need to do to protect the system. And that's what the commissioner said. If we're giving you an opportunity as the users of the seven basin states to come up with a plan to deal with this, but if you can't, we'll do it. And it, and all bets are off as to how we do it. And
during the Senate hearings, one of the senators asked the commissioner, well, what is your plan? And based on the response, the plan is they don't have one, because they said, well, we want to have the states come up with the answer.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of some of the solution sets are any different than what I had stated.
Not really. And most of my information is coming from the press and the media right now. That's about the only place you can get, unless you're party to those specific discussions. But what I've been seeing is a lot of a lot of finger pointing, you know, upper basin, lower basin. Yeah. So I'm not very optimistic that they're going to come up with anything near even the 2 million, much less the 4 million. But
I thought the existing plan was predetermined when you get to a certain point beyond tier two that they could step in, but not tier
one. Well, they would step in when you got just beyond a tier three. It was based on the water surface elevation of Lake Mead. Right. And I think what's happened is, I think because of the big drop we saw at Lake Powell, that there was a sense of urgency that maybe there needs to be something, you know, before we, but maybe that even the lower basin drought contingency plan wasn't enough to mitigate the shortage on the Colorado River. So, this was a surprise. I think it was a surprise to everybody.
Yeah, Peter. Isn't it August that they usually make the declaration, the shortage declaration? So
yeah.
I'm not sure how that all plays into this as well.
As part of the executive team for the Southern Arizona Water Users Association, we had meetings. You know, our level of influence goes up to the state legislature. I don't even know if they're involved, and I don't think so. I think this is between literally the states at the highest levels, and when I mean that, I think it's probably senators and congressmen and the Bureau of Reclamation. Yeah, I don't know how much input even ADWR or CAP has at this point.
Yeah, I thought that ADWR and CAP were like...
They've joined up.
Yeah, they're our negotiator for the state. Bushotsky and Cook.
Yeah.
But another thing I saw recently and could throw a real wrinkle into all this is, you know, the tribes. They're now saying, hey, you haven't even reached out to us, and we're, you know, days away from having to have a plan, and you haven't even talked to us.
Yeah, and they have a huge allegation.
So
stay tuned as soon as I know something, this commission will know, as well as the town manager and mayor and council. But right now it's just, every day I read something in the press and it's just more of the same. I mean, nothing concrete's come out yet. But, here again, this is why we've been, this is why the state has, even in Southern Arizona, why we've been storing over 600,000 acre feet in the Arizona Water Bank. This is why we store tens of thousands of acre feet in storage areas. I mean, it's all, these are all the reasons why. Are they solution sets that were intended for perpetuity? No, they're solution sets that are intended to carry you over to get to the permanent solution sets. It's great, we have enough water stored to, maybe make up for an offset for 20 years, but then what happens? Well, you better be doing something more in those 20 years. So stay tuned.
Just update I'm sure you've talked about this before, but update my memory. So how much of a deficit are we running right now as coming out of Lake Powell? How much water are we using more than is coming into the lake?
So right now we're in a tier one reduction, and we're heading towards a tier two. So I don't remember exactly what the numbers are from a deficit standpoint. A tier one, is it around 400,000 acre feet a year, I think, reduction on a CAP, and a tier two might be around 600 maybe. I'm not exactly right, but it's, the intent of the lower base drought contingency plan is to stop the water surface elevations of Lake Mead from falling, too fast, too low. But, it's clear that the tier one isn't enough, so now we're moving to tier two, and based on the Bureau of Reclamation's comments, I think they have concerns that might be enough, might not be enough. Okay, Okay, so moving on to our water use. So here's our main service area here. And this is January through June. Our groundwater production, it's a little less than what we were last year. Last year, we were about 2,300 acre feet from January through the end of June. And we're just under, we're about 50 acre feet less than that. So we're pumping a little less groundwater. Our CAP production, we base load our CAP production, so it's steady state, and it's holding at just under 1,200 acre feet from January through June. And our reclaim production is just a little lower. So overall, we're using a little less resource pretty much across the board from January through June compared to this time last year in our main service area. Likewise, in our countryside service area, groundwater production's down by about 15 acre feet from January through June of this time of year. And here again, countryside, we base load our CAP to that location. On a good note here, I've been working with Tucson Water in across all of our wheeling stations to see what we can up our wheeling capacity to, and we got the approval to increase our CAP wheeling capacity at Countryside, so we can expect to see this bar go down a little bit in the future.
Here, yes. Where do we stand on the expansion of the reclaim system?
So at the Countryside service area, there's no, we don't have reclaim there, no plan expansion. With respect to our main service area, Mayor Council voted to add to this the town strategic leadership plan for the water utility to seriously look at expanding our reclaim system to Riverfront Park,
right.
The Elkin Key Store 9-hole, and JDK Park.
Is that so, moving ahead, or is that?
Yeah, we're doing that. We're doing that work right now.
Oh, okay.
That's this fiscal year.
So it's work. Under design.
No, not under design. It just here's what were they working on the alignment, nailing down with the alignment, and what would it cost?
Huh.
Because I mean, if you're talking,
it's pretty far.
An $8 million project.
Yeah.
Okay, where's that? Where's the $8 million come from? Who pays for it? Those are all things that. Council's going to have to wrestle with. Yes.
Would you need a pond for the 9-hole?
Say it again.
Would you need a pond?
There is a pond right now.
There is one there.
Yeah. Right now we fill.
Oh, the sure. Pond. Of course there is.
With potable water.
So all you have to do is change that over to reclaim.
Right. Well, we
that requires some engineering on the pond, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's lined. But we'd have to look at that.
Is it? I remember what we went through. With aligning the one down.
But here again, we'd have to look at that one, but the funding requirements on, I have no idea what the condition is of that liner is. But anyways, to Commissioner Wilkie and Commissioner Hollingsworth, point is right now the utility is doing work on, what would our reclaimed alignment look like and what's it going to cost to expand the reclaim system. We did an analysis on reclaimed water availability, and even though expanding to those parts of the system would probably be in excess of our reclaimed entitlement, the city of Tucson has the infrastructure capability and our IGA allows us to purchase reclaimed water from them. So. And we have the source of supply.
You didn't get enough capacity back when the golf course up here closed.
We did get, we did get some, but between the 9-hole, JDK, Riverfront Park, the expansions to Naranja, you choose it all up and then some. Because we did the expansion to Naranja Park, adding those ball fields, that'll be served with reclaimed water.
Would you put CDO on as well? Fields and CDO if you got to J3.
So one of the things we're doing is we're providing options in our analysis to go to CDO and Bush Ridge High School. They have athletic fields there, as well as the Oro Valley Country Club. They're right there also.
That would be a more interesting negotiation.
Yeah, that's a whole different can of worms. I'm not talking, we're just doing feasibility, not legal aspects right now.
Also, how about Copper Creek School?
You know,
it's just a little uphill from around the park.
It is, but I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. It's not that big of a field.
Yeah. We're just thinking for painted sky.
What we were looking at is on a line, we could just pick up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Okay, Peter, thank you. Next item is Town Council Communications with Councilmember Nolan.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. It's nice to see everyone. Thank you for your informative reports. Regarding council, we're not meeting this month. August is a month off for us. But planning and zoning did meet last Thursday, and the Naranja Trails development, 64 units on Naranja, was approved by planning and zoning, so that goes to council sometime later in the future. And I just wanted to let you guys know that despite our water challenges, development does continue and applications continue to go in to us and into the town staff. So I think you guys should be aware of that, that building is not stopping, and that's something we should just keep on our radar. And I thank everybody, and that's my report.
Moving on, item 8, subcommittee commission reports. First one is the finance subcommittee. I can report that we did meet. Chuck, Bob, myself, Mary, and Peter,
of course, Nicole,
to discuss the what is the correct level of funding for the reserve account. What we ended on was essentially part of the problem is the obscurity created by our debt payments happen once a year. And they happen right at the end of the fiscal year. And so what we agreed to look at during the budgeting cycle is that how can we change that so we can get a better look, or at least a more, maybe a more cash basis as opposed to an accrual basis, look at what that funding really is. And I open it up for comments from Bob and Chuck to clarify our end. So we'll talk one more time, probably around the budgeting cycle in 2 weeks.
Rate setting.
What's that?
Rate setting. Okay. Rate setting cycle.
Okay. Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee, any updates?
Yeah, we met about a week ago, and basically Karen gave us her presentation on her project update. We had a good discussion on that, and I think Peter indicated that we would probably try to meet as a committee again sometime before the end of the year, probably to talk about what's going to happen with our water shortage. So we'll see how that plays out.
Spectacular. Okay, any other further comments? Okay. Peter, back to you for a director's report.
Okay. Wrapping it up. So upcoming meetings. You know, August 17th, Town Council regular session was canceled, but we resume back to business September 7th. Town Council regular session, Council Chambers is 5 p.m. And then September 12th, we have our Water Utility Commission meeting in this room at 5 p.m. I just wanted to highlight some things here. I want this something I'll start doing with the Commission at the end of every fiscal year. This Commission did a lot of work this last fiscal year, very important work. On September 8, 2021, Council unanimously approves updates to our water code. You know, that was a body of work that came out of this commission, and we wrestled with that for several years and finally got it to a form where I felt good about taking it to Council, and that I thought it was something Council would approve, and the timing was perfect, and they approved unanimously. November 2021, Council unanimously approves our NWRDS supplemental IGA. This is the IGA where Lowell Valley's the lead agency on building the partners' booster stations and portions of the transmission made out to Twin Peaks Road, which that project has, the pause button's been on hold, but the IGA is still in effect.
So when we resume that project, we'll have the IG in place. June 1st, 2022, Council approved our fiscal year 2022-23 water rates, and that's thanks to the body of work by this commission, the subcommittee, and this commission, and of course, with the continuing unanimous support of our mayor and council and our community. June 15, 2022, Council unanimously approves our fiscal year budget for 22-23, as well as a 10-year CIP. And on April 1st, 2022, we rendered our to the Council of Water Utility annual report. So in closing, I'd like to thank this our subcommittees and this commission for their excellent work, their great questions, their continued support. I think they've given the Council the confidence to be supportive of the Water Utility and our mission, because they know how seriously you take this work. And so thank you for that. It makes my job just that much easier having the body of work that this commission does. So thank you very much. That concludes my report.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Do we have any cards? No audience participation. I don't see anybody in here. So we will close the call to audience. Any suggestions for future agenda items from commission members? Okay. Anything? I was looking at that side, sorry. Okay. Well, with that, I would like to request that we make a call for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
We'll take a roll call vote in just a second, I think.
All right. Commissioner Forrest?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollingsworth?
Yes.
Commissioner McMillan?
Yes.
Commissioner Mielke?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hitt?
Yes.
Chair Merrick?